Didn't even get a chance to talk about the Manchester Derby, which I know you were very keen to. What's your ideal outcome of that game, by the way?
Manchester United win, no threat to Liverpool, and Manchester City are. It's as simple as that.
OTB AM. Live. Weekday mornings from 7:30 on the OTB Sports app.
The Football Show on Off the Ball.
With Sky. All the football you love in one place. Across Sky Sports, BT Sport and Premier Sports.
I'm prepared to do anything I can to play for my country again.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
You're welcome along to the Football Show. We are busy. There is much going on. West Ham third in the league. Big win against Liverpool. We brought you live commentary yesterday on Off the Ball. Chelsea did drop 2 points at home to Burnley to somewhat mitigate the Liverpool pain. Arsenal up to fifth on a nice winning streak now, since Mikel Arteta is beginning to turn the tide there. Saturday lunchtime, of course, Man City strolled through 90 minutes at Old Trafford. Not to mention two Premier League managerial sackings in Daniel Farke at Norwich and Dean Smith at Aston Villa. So lots going on. Time for this man. There bloody is a lot going on, Pat Nevin.
It's too much. Head slightly spinning at the end of this week. But you get weeks like this now and again. First of all, little line on the managerial thing. It always seems to happen in November, you know, and that's the right thing to do because you need the time. But it's not the ones we expected. All the ones are falling except the one everyone expected was Ole. But yeah, if you think you're going to have to get rid of him, you might as well do it now. You know, bite the bullet, give a new guy time, give him some money if he needs it during the transfer window. It always makes sense. It's a dangerous, dangerous time. Although I have to say the Farke one was a bit of a surprise. Yeah, real. In fact, both of them were slightly surprising in a way, because Villa had done so well, you know, last season. And it is one of those things you think, you know, give them a bit of a chance at the start of this season, but they've just not waited, have they?
No, they sure haven't. So Villa in 16th, 10 points from 11. They had started brightly in some respects, the wins against Manchester United, the result against Everton, a sense that they were coping okay with the Jack Grealish departure. They had spent big, you know, 100 million on Buendia, Danny Ings, Leon Bailey, I think in total under Dean Smith, even with Jack Grealish being sold for 100 million. The net spend is over 200 million. So they have spent money, which would be the case against Dean Smith. Villa have lost 5 in a row. I suppose the case for him, he took over Villa when they're in the bottom half of the Championship, 10-game winning streak, make their way up through the playoffs, looked doomed in the Premier League before the pandemic, but he kept them up against the odds, 11th last season, and as you said, give him a chance. So the Dean Smith one, I hadn't watched too much Villa, so I wasn't too sure. It does seem the performances were worryingly bad.
Yeah, and no, they haven't been anywhere near as good. They were so exciting, you know, when they were an unknown quantity to some, well, not completely unknown, but, you know, there were some players that were coming through that were suddenly really special. Obviously, Grealish, but particularly McGinn as well. You know, people get used to them. And also, you take Grealish away from that. And you think to yourself, it's only a player. Do you really need a rebuild after that? But it was so important to them, you kind of do. And the rebuild is a whole bunch of players, 2 or 3 coming in, but they all got to bed in. And you've got to find a system that works for them, and it's got to click into gear. And that's actually not very long to allow that to happen. You know, just these games at the start of the season. And you can have a little run of poor form, and that can happen to absolutely any team out with the top 4 or 5. And then to jump on them like that, they better have somebody very, very good ready to come in, because that's, you know, a real surprise to me that you go with someone who's done a very good job over 2 divisions and then had a bit of a slip after your star player's gone, and then you hoof them right away. I understand the thinking. If you're going to do it, you do it. You might as well do it soon. But you just wonder. I mean, I don't know what the betting is just now, but what stick John Terry would get if he walked back into that job?
Well, the names being linked certainly this morning, last time I looked, were the Danish manager, Kasper Hjulmand, Ralf Hasenhüttl, Steven Gerrard and Roberto Martinez. They were the names. To what extent those names are firmly linked and on firm foundations, I don't know. But I mean, I don't know. Anyone eye popping there for you? Jared would be box office, but in terms of guaranteed improvement on Dean Smith.
There's no guarantee. And Robbie Martinez is a great mate of mine, but I wouldn't see it as a guarantee, you know, because, you know, what he's done with where he is just now is very good. But, you know, there's some quite good players in Belgium. And there's a few over there that say, you know, he should have done better because he should have won something with that group. So, as you know, there's no guarantees in the Premier League anyway, but and some of them will be interesting. Your eyes raise a little bit. But I mean, I'm maybe a little bit slower than most people. I'm kind of think people should be given an opportunity to turn things around, especially when there's been either A, massive changes, or B, A, massive change. And this one's been A, massive change. You really need to adapt to what the team actually stands for when you take Grealish away. So I'm kind of hurt for him a wee bit because he has been hoofed that quickly. None of them really jump out that, you know, they're an absolute stick on certainty. You know, maybe Gerrard would be very interesting. Would Gerrard take that job?
I was going to ask like you, that? Is that a good move? Is that an attractive move for Steven Gerrard?
Well, considering, you know, there was big hints towards Newcastle, you know, right now, you know, Newcastle seems a bit of a stinker for some people because they're going down. But everybody knows if Newcastle stick by you for 3 years, it's going to be a cracker. You know, it's going to be some job you're going to have. So that's one that you, if you were Stevie G, and he was heavily linked with that one, even though they're down that part of the league, it's the money and it's the time you will get. And I think if you're going to get a team out of trouble, with Villa, if you don't get them out of trouble, you're probably looking at getting sacked at the end of the season again. Whereas if it's Newcastle, they're that far down and everyone knows they're bordering on basket cases, you're probably allowed to actually get relegated so you can have a massive rebuild with the right amount of money and the right amount of time. So Stevie G, I'm not putting him beyond him to do that, but it's a big thing to walk away from, you know, Rangers where they are just now. And you can look at a classic example is Frank Lampard, isn't it? You know, he goes away and takes the Chelsea job. It doesn't actually matter. Your first major job you get in England, it can absolutely batter you. You know, and it, I mean, Frank Lampard at Chelsea, I mean, that wasn't a bad one to get. I think Stevie G is looking for higher than that.
So I was listening to David Gold on TalkSport this morning, and David Moyes was given a guard of honour when he entered the boardroom after the match. I'd love to have a right thought, I'm sure, crossed David Moyes' mind as he got that guard of honour. But hey, you take it when it's going.
I've got an my imagination's running away with me. The guard of honour, they're all got their hands up with a wee flag, and they've all got a little hatchet behind the other arm. Yeah. Next time you come in, you're going to get that. I mean, it's amazing what he's done with them. I mean, I love it. Obviously, again, it's somebody who's a mate, and I've never stopped at any point in saying the same things. I rate him as a top, top manager. And of course, I sounded like I was crying in the wilderness when he was having a tough time in Spain and obviously up in the northeast. But, I mean, everything is there for a very good manager and, you know, a sensible manager who, given the right amount of time, will do a very, very good job for you. And even West Ham didn't give, you know, they were unsure about him, obviously, going away and coming back sort of stuff. But he has put together what looks like a phenomenal-looking outfit. They're good at what they do. They're not a lump into the middle team. That's not what they are. They're far more than that. But he's got so much out of every one of them and then used that physicality. And knowing that they're not good at certain things, they don't do it. You know, like, they know Kurt Zouma's not going to play out for the back. So they kind of don't ask me to it. You know, they just do something else. And you watch the likes of Manchester United, you know, obviously you need to mention him and them in the same breath. And they're trying to play it for the back, but they can't against teams that are, you know, that they're not good enough to play it from the back from. So that's a really intriguing thing, that you look at the guy and what he does, and they're good at set pieces, and they know that there are weaknesses, and he works in that. And he knows that's the strength of going and use them. They're fantastic, you know. And what they did, certainly against United, I think what surprised everyone who watched it, and certainly me as well, you know, they get the goal, and then they're drawn back, and then Liverpool look like Liverpool again. And then you think the second half's going to go a certain way. And it's just brilliant, isn't it? He completely changes it. No, I'm not going for that. I'm not accepting my players going for that. They are not going to, you know, like, sit back, take it, try and play in the break and break and nothing else and believe you're going to get beat. No, I'm going to tell them we're capable of beating this lot and here are the weaknesses. And they go and do it. It was, honestly, it was a bit of a masterclass in a lot of ways. Maybe got a wee bit lucky with that goal, you know, the first goal where I think a number would have given that as a free kick. I wouldn't, personally. I thought that the goalkeeper was just a little bit weak. And I think just the way the rules are at the moment in England, there's a little bit more leeway given. He needs to be a wee bit stronger than that. But certainly all the way through the game, you know, certainly in that second half, I mean, he must have been more proud of him than just about any game this season. And do you see anyone? I don't see anyone coming to, you know, the London Stadium and thinking, right, we've got decent, you know, we're going to win this, we're going to walk this. Everyone's going to have a battle there because they're so well organised, with the one big caveat, he ain't got depth. Oh. And that's going to be...
Does he ever not have depth? So across the 11 games thus far this season, he's only made four changes across the entire 11 games in the Premier League. Needless to say, he's top of that table for minimal changes made. Now, he is using different players in Europe. However, once he gets past Lanzini, tends to come on, doesn't he? And I suppose he's a touch of depth with Koufal, who's on the bench. Ben Johnson, the 21-year-old, started. But really, once he gets to player 14-15, things do drop off a touch. And based on his team selections, he knows that.
He does. There's decent players there. You know, Noble will come in and do your job. Yeah. You know, he's always been a good player. Diop will do your job. Fredericks and players like that. I actually really like Masuaka, and he comes on quite regularly as well. But they're not going to be a team that are going to go and stay at the very top level, are they? They're going to kind of do your job. Mm. So he knows. He absolutely knows that he can't afford two or three injuries, and he clearly can't allow Antonio to get injured. I mean, you've got Yarmolenko, who could do a job, you know, coming from certain areas. But in reality, no one's even close to Antonio and the effect that he can have in the games. And watching Antonio as he's came along the last few seasons, you know, because he's got injuries, he's just kept on improving. But the pace he's going at, and he's lasting much longer than a lot of the games now. But you know it's going to blow up. It is. It's not maybe. It is. It's going to blow up, and it's probably with an injury. If you keep on going to the well that much, they need covering in various areas. They've done it at centre-back. They're probably okay there now. But that's Moyes' way. He kind of tinkers with him as tiny wee bits. But if you're talking about top four, it's not that. It's much, much more than that. Just look at the squads of everybody else in the top four generally. Yeah. And they're just phenomenal in comparison.
Yeah, I hadn't realised how well Antonio was going until yesterday. I saw this season thus far, he's been involved in 9 goals, as in scored 6, 3 assists. This is an 11 games, so only Mo Salah is better than him on that front. So he's having a remarkable season. The other thing that jumps out, as well as the very obvious organisation, and you can see like this level of concentration emanating from them when Liverpool are in possession. You know, they're closing off avenues, they're in touch with each other, the spaces are good. It just, they make it look, Mourinho teams when they were defending well made it look kind of easy to control the game without the ball. And obviously it's not easy when you look at Liverpool scoring 5 at Old Trafford. But so West Ham are doing that. And then the other thing within the organisation which jumps out, if the theme of the weekend was not closing down and not running hard, take Fernandes at Old Trafford for the cross for the Bailly on goal, which was held up as the big example. Jeez, West Ham, don't half get in your faces. I mean, Jarrod Bowen and Benrahma and Johnson and Creswell, they are out, they are on the ball. And you kind of have to say, well, jeez, players don't do that without a manager insisting on it and really drilling them to within an inch of their life. So for Moyes, of all the weekends to put in a defensive masterclass like that, the day after what we saw at Old Trafford wasn't a bad one for him. I'm sure it must cross his mind, like, they got rid of me too early. They didn't give me a chance.
It crosses my mind all the time because I said they were mad for doing it. So yeah, it must cross their mind, and it will. It won't be in the forefront of his mind just now, but he'll think, I can get another one of the big ones. I'm capable of doing it. He will feel that. He was realistic enough to know that, you know, will probably won't be Manchester United because people don't like egg in their faces. But he'll feel that there are other massive jobs. But he won't be thinking it too much just now because he knows that he's in a great place. You know, with the squad that he's got, with the love that he's getting from the West Ham fans. And if you're getting those guards of honour, that kind of helps as well. But he would rather have a pen and a piece of paper and a check, rather than the old Gardevoir. I think that would help a wee bit more.
Yeah.
But he's been so sensible over the last number of years. I mean, in a way, Man United's helped him more than anything, because what was his failing at Manchester United is when he asked them, "Do you want it done right away or do you want legacy?" which will take a while and I won't throw all the money at it right away. They said, "We want legacy." So he didn't spend the money stupidly right away. Well, he's learned that lesson. You don't listen to people. Yeah. You just get in there and get as much money as you can out of them and you get the best team on the pitch and then you're judged by that. Because nobody's turned around a year after Moyes left Man United and said, "Oh no, but you were building a legacy and you were trying to do it the best way financially." Nobody gives a stuff about that in the end. So a manager can't think that way. Not in the modern game, because no one will give you that chance. And Moise knows that now, 100%. So he will be there with, not exactly the begging bowl, but he'll be there making his demand, saying, "Look, we've got a chance at Champions League football." And they have got a chance at Champions League football, but they haven't got a chance with this smaller squad. They need more backup, probably two, maybe three.
Mm, yeah, because he was asked on TV, "Is this a title challenge?" And he was thinking, "How do I answer that without seeming too negative?" But really, I need to shoot this down.
Can I give you the answer to that brilliantly? Because he was asked similar questions when he was in Sunderland. And he said, he just told the truth.
Yeah.
He said, "Look, this is a team I could go down." And he was slaughtered for it.
Yeah.
And I think we chatted about it at the time. And I said,
I thought it was not great. And I think, because he literally said yesterday, "Well, I don't want to seem negative." So clearly that's another scar which he has and he's learned from.
Yeah. And you think, well, wait a minute, I'm not going to go too heavy on this, but keeping a realism, and of course he's a dour Scotsman like the rest of us. I'm not as dour as someone. But he's learned the lesson of, if I go ultra negative or ultra, just sensible and logical, you could get battered for it. So you need to caveat it all the time. So you're not actually hearing what he absolutely thinks. He's being honest, but he's caveating it slightly. Mm. The caveat has to be, and he doesn't want to say, "Give me the money, show us the money." He can't say that out loud. But he doesn't have to love everybody else saying it for him, because we all know it's the truth. And that's what the message is. And it's, I have to say, like a lot of people, I'm totally shocked. I thought top six would be brilliant for them, because they've had a good time under them last season. Mm. But this is pretty special. But as we all know, it's still early times in the season and it only takes a couple of injuries. It really only takes a couple. And they'll be struggling to put a run together and score goals. I've heard lots and lots of names put forward. The thing is, I think quite a lot of players like the idea of working with Moise, because he is straightforward, honest. And to go back to that other point you were making about the fact that certain managers get you to do that running, we know who they are, don't we? Conte's going to get you doing it. You know that Klopp's going to get you doing it. Tuchel's going to get you doing it. It's dead simple. If you don't do it, you don't play. And it doesn't matter who you are. And I don't think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's been in a position to do that for a long time, because some of the players that weren't doing it were just too big a name to be able to do it, for him. Whereas you look at it now, eventually he'll give up and say, "Right, forget that. I don't care who you are. I'm just going to play the guys that work for me." I just don't know if there's enough of them that are good enough.
Well, let's talk United then, because we talked to Liverpool a good bit earlier on with John Giles. So the Manchester Derby, it was a complete stroll. I mean, it was actually a dull game. In some respects, it was so dead. They were so in control of Manchester City, and it was in that, in some respects, more demoralising and chastening for Manchester United. So the running point that you make, because that was the focal point, the big discussion post-match was the lack of Manchester United running an application. And I mentioned the Fernandes moment where he's kind of closing down as if he's closing someone down on the halfway line as opposed to stop a cross. So maybe there's a degree of habit there, but that's given him way too much of a free pass. I don't really know what to say about the situation at Old Trafford anymore. I mean, it's just painful at this stage. The post-match interviews are painful. The sound bites are painful. The performances are awful. The tactical efforts to try and stem the tide are just transparently going to fall flat in their face. Like, everything about it is falling apart. I don't know. It's just horrific.
I know. You feel sorry for someone who's got himself into that position. And you could actually take just about any player and then decide why that's a problem, because there are so many just now.
Yeah.
You know, Fernandes, he's not going to work like that, so you can't do a press, and neither is Cristiano. So you've now got two players playing for you, so you can't play that way, full stop. As we've known in the past, Pogba will do it sometimes and he won't do it other times, and you've no idea when he's going to do it. So you've got big, huge name players and maybe the three most talented players, and you've no way of trusting if they're going to be able to do or want to do what you're asking them to do, which is to play at that high tempo. Because either A, incapable, or B, don't want it.
Can I rudely interrupt you in that point? Because I'm visualising Graeme Souness and Roy Keane disgusted at the notion that certain players won't put in a shift. You know, that the memory of the Sky chat lingers, I think, for people. If Conte had arrived at Old Trafford, would he take a look at Ronaldo and take a look at Fernandes because of their lack of work and say, out you go, no?
It's easier for Conte to sideline Ronaldo. It's easier for him. I think he can do that. And just say openly, no, he's an impact player. We'll bring him on as an impact. He's a certain age and he's brilliant and we love him, but we'll use him as an impact player. And that's fine. And if it means bringing Cavani or whatever when he's fit, or players, get Rashford working harder as a front man or one of an attacking 3-4-3, he can do that. He can do it without a problem. He can do it without everybody looking at pictures of Sir Alex saying Ronaldo should be playing. It doesn't matter. Conte's, he's enough. You know, he's got that strength of personality. You can do it and it's fine. And he's also got the history behind him. You can do it and it's fine. So he can actually do that. Mm. As well, there's enough of them there that are willing to buy into that. And you will maybe get more buy-in over certain types of managers. You just will do. Certain types of managers can actually make these players work harder. It can't make them better quickly. It cannot do that. And the ones that have got weaknesses, you know, and it's taken a long time, but I think it's a real shame, though, but people now see all the weaknesses of Wan-Bissaka, which I remember saying to you a long time ago when he was at Palace, how much I loved him. But can he really kick the ball?
No, it's not great when he's one of your wing backs at home. It's not going to work. So then I wonder, because you would hate in 5 years' time for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer to release his autobiography and for him to say, well, look, I love Ronaldo as much as anyone does, but I didn't really want them to buy him because it messed up my plans, and I had Greenwood playing centre forward and I had Cavani and I thought it was okay. And then I just sort of felt I had to play him, and then there was Alex Ferguson and caught on video and, you know, you got to play your best players. And I just kind of, I went along a bit with it. I mean, that would be so frustrating, because here's the point. This is coming to an end, it seems. Let's have it end on your terms. Like, you've nothing, you've no other cards left to play here than to do what you in your heart of hearts think is right, I would say.
Well, his other card was to change the system, and he did that, right?
Yeah.
And it worked for 1 week, and then it didn't work the next week. And then he's still trying to play off the back, and against high-tempo teams are not good enough, you know, against the Liverpools and Chelsea and Man City, not good enough to be able to do that. So they've actually got a technical problem in that. But you're right, eventually. So he kind of got himself in a position where, wait a minute, I'll try this thing. And this thing looked like it worked for a week, and then it's not worked again. And you're right, it comes to a stage where he thinks, sod it, I'll just do it. I just want the guys that are going to work their socks off on me, and there might be a team spirit that grows from there.
Mm.
Of course, the thing that is a catch-22, that lot might not be good enough. They might not be good enough. They'll be good enough to get, you know, they're good players, so they could get you nearish towards the top four, but they're not going to get you anywhere close to the top spot which they're aiming for, or they were initially aiming for. But yeah, that's what it'll come down to in the end. They will do that, because you'd rather go out absolutely in your own terms, and every manager gets that. Problem is, it might not actually get there, but then that's a suspicion they might do, because let's be honest, is there somebody shouting and bawling out there who's the most obvious replacement that's going to come in and completely and utterly, you can trust, oh, that's going to be a good next Man United manager? Because you kind of need to do that with the next one.
Yeah.
And there's not an obvious one out there who's desperate to do it and who will walk into it.
Mm. What do you think, by the way, of Brendan Rodgers? Leicester not going well. Obviously, Rodgers would jump at it, I think.
Mm. I think he would jump at it at the moment because they're not going as well.
Yeah.
It's the expectation is weird with Leicester, because, you know, they've just overperformed for so long. And it was never, ever going to last forever. Eventually, they will fade back into mid-table for a while, and that will happen. and he'll look at it and think, well, wait a minute, if I'm a top man, I just don't think he'd be very popular at United. You know, certainly the fans wouldn't go for that very, I don't think they would want him at all. Mm. But some would, but I think a large amount wouldn't be. And they'd be really quick to go on to him.
Because of Liverpool or because of his personality?
I think Liverpool mostly, but as soon as it gets wrong, things go wrong at all. You got a lot. You got a lot from Man United fans allowing Ole Gunnar Solskjaer a bit of leeway. He won't get any. He will get absolutely none because of A. I'm actually not going to say the personality. I'm going to say the considered personality, what people think his personality is,
sure.
How he's absolutely portrayed, and he's portrayed himself in certain times, but how he's been portrayed. Because you tend to find most players that have worked under him are pretty positive about him. So, you know, I think that's a big, big risk if they went for Brendan.
Yeah.
I don't think he's a bad manager, and I think he'd do a decent job, who knows, but it's a massive, massive risk to go for Brendan.
Yeah, fair enough. So, with Conte gone, slipped through their fingers, who is the obvious candidate for you?
I don't know. Right. I honestly don't know. I know who I would have, but it's because I'm difficult. I would have Moisey back. And I would say, oh, just you lot, shut up and let that guy do
it. Are you being deadly serious? You would get Moyes back?
If I was there and it was me that was making the decision, I would do that. I wouldn't have got rid of him in the first place. But I know, I fully understand that Man United fans wouldn't like it. I know and fully understand that he'd get hammered. They would be absolutely hammered in the media. And I know it'd be a difficult thing, another really difficult time to take over Manchester United. But, you know, I don't think there's a more obvious Man United type manager who's sitting out there just now. I don't actually know if he's available. In fact, in all honesty, right now, I'm not sure he would take it right at this moment. And I really don't. So I think they just go abroad and, you know, look at who's doing the best. And, you know, who's the most recent German we can get?
Who's the new wonder kid? Yeah, that kind of
exactly.
thing.
Exactly. And, you know, and it's such a risk. It's a massive risk. Remember, very, very recently, you know, it's very recently that all the top jobs were apparently going to Eddie Howe. And then he was out for quite a long time. And then he's second choice, maybe third choice at Newcastle.
Mm.
So, you know, there is no obvious one. The big ones, some of the best managers in the business, they've either had such as Mourinho and didn't work, or else they ain't going there because of where they want to be just now. And that's where the problem is.
Before you go, Chelsea dropped 2 points to mitigate the pain somewhat of Liverpool yesterday. Thomas Tuchel's verdict was unlucky. Can happen in football. Should have won. So, one, do we take that at face value? Is that right? And secondly, talk to us about Ross Barkley, because 27 now, first Premier League start, standing ovation on 73 minutes. During the summer, his number 8 jersey was ripped off him and given to Kovacic, which I'm sure, you know, you wouldn't need to be paranoid to take that as a message. But Tuchel was singing his praises, saying he's really knuckled down and, you know, he maybe sees a bit of a future there for Barkley at the club, who's still only 27.
Yeah, and it was his last kick of the ball in that game could have won Chelsea the game, you know, but he just blasted it over the bar. But he certainly lifted himself. Attitude's been absolutely perfect, you know, and he just had to get his head slightly screwed on. It's a battle there. He's gone out and looked at the rest of, and he knows that anywhere from here is downhill for him. Everywhere he goes from here is a step down, and it's a big old jump down, maybe more than a step down. So I think he's given it one last go. And, you know, Tuchel's been like that with a load of players. You know, Callum Hudson-Odoi was out, brought on, substituted. But you're not dead to me. You're out because there's a reason for it. If you show me the right stuff, I'll be back in. Chalobah, nobody gave him a thought. No, you're back in. Ruben Loftus-Cheek, absolutely gone. Luke's having a terrible time. If you do it right, you're back in. So there's no huffs with Tuchel. There's no side to it. If you are a good player and you are playing well, you're in. It's so stupidly simple for him, but that's exactly what he's done. And he gives him something that maybe only Ziyech gives him, which is that bit of creativity with the head up in the kind of 10 position. And they are looking for a player that can do that for them. Ziyech hasn't done it to the level they wanted to do it. So they keep on looking around. Pulisic has been so injured for so long that you just don't know. And he's more of he's not a creator. He's a mover with the ball and a mover off the ball and a scorer. So they do need somebody who can unpick a lock. And they're looking to him. I'm not sure he'll be the one long term. I'll be absolutely honest with you. As for Chelsea, two games, and that's two goals they've scored in the last two games against lowly Malmo and lowly Burnley. So have they got a problem? Well, I'm not one to usually throw stats at you, but 46 shots on target in those, in those two games and five against. It's just stupidly, you know, it happens like that. They actually played, they watched the game live and they played really, really well. Right. They moved it well. They had massive amounts of possession. Actually, it was one of their best performances for me of the season, but they didn't win. So Tuchel, I suppose if you didn't watch the whole game, which very few, well, you couldn't really, unless you have a special way like me, you think, well, that's a strange result, and you see highlights. Actually, no.
Okay.
They played exceptionally well.
No panic stations yet then. Well, they're 3 points clear of the chasing pack heading into the international break. Pat and Evan, we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks. I would think we've got to go and beat Portugal and Luxembourg, and then we'll chat to you when we chat to you.
I look forward to after Scotland beat Moldova and Denmark.
Good, okay. 6 points all round. Thanks a million. Cheers. Pat and Evan there. Football on Off the Ball brought to you by Sky, all the football you love in one place across Sky Sports, BT Sport and Premier Sports.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Sky. Watch Premier League, Women's Super League, EFL, Scottish Premiership and much more. Live on Sky Sports.